ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय बुरुले श्रीमद्भक्तवेदान्त स्वामी नामने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेव गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाशाचरे शतरणे श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 50. Krishna establishes Dwarka. Text 30. Jagraha Viratam Ramo Jarasandham Mahabalam Hata Anika Avashishta Asum Singha Simham Iva Ojasa Jagraha Viratam Ramo Jarasandha Mahabalam Hatanika Vashistasum Singa Singam Ivaujasa Jagraha Viratam Ramo Jara Sandam Mahabalam Atani Kavashistasum Singha Singham Ivaujasa Viratam, who was deprived of his chariot. Arama, Lord Balaram, Jarasandam, Jarasandha, Maha, very, Balam, strong, Hata, killed, Anika, whose army, Avashishta, remaining, Asum, whose breath, Singha, a line, Singham, another line, Eva, as, Ojasa, forcibly. Translation, Jarasandha with his chariot lost and all his soldiers dead was left with only his breath. At that point, Lord Balaram forcibly seized the powerful warrior just as one line takes hold of another. With the divine noose of Varuna and other mortal ropes, Balaram began tying up Jarasandha, who had killed so many foes. But Lord Govinda still had a purpose to fulfill through Jarasandha, and thus he asked Balaram to stop. Purport, the word hatarati means who has killed his enemies or through whom his enemies would be killed. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti has provided this doctrine. Text 32 and 3. Jarasandha, whom fighters had highly honored, was ashamed after being released by the two lords of the universe, and thus he decided to undergo penance. On the road, however, several kings convinced him with both spiritual wisdom and mundane arguments that he should give up his idea of self-abnegation. They told him, your defeat by the Yadus was simply the unavoidable reaction to your past karma. All of his armies, having been killed and himself neglected by the personality of Godhead, King Jarasandha, son of Brihadratha, then sadly returned to the kingdom of the Magadhas. Lord Mukunda had crossed the ocean of his enemy's armies with his own military force completely intact. He received congratulations from the denizens of heaven, who showered him with flowers. The people of Mathura, relieved of their feverish anxiety and filled with joy, came out to meet him as professional bards, heralds, and panegyrists sang in praise of his victory. As the Lord entered his city, conch shells and kettle drums sounded, and many drums, horns, veenas, flutes, and mrudangas played in concert. The boulevards were sprinkled with water, there were banners everywhere, and the gateways were decorated for the celebration. The citizens were elated, and the city resounded with the chanting of Vedic hymns. As the women of the city affectionately looked at the Lord, their eyes wide open with love. Their scattered flower gardens, yogurt, parched rice, and newly grown sprouts upon him. Purport, all this is taking place as Lord Krishna entered the city of Mathura. Text 40, Lord Krishna then presented to the Yadu king all the wealth that had fallen on the battlefield, namely the countless ornaments of the dead warriors. Purport, Shri Vishnu Chakravarti adds that jeweled ornaments had also been collected from the horses and other animals. What might be added here for the sake of the squeamish is that Jarasandha came to Mathura with the clean intention of slaughtering every last man in the city, including Krishna and Balaram. It is out of the causeless mercy of the Lord that he gives the conditioned souls a taste of their own medicine and thus helps them become more sensitive to the laws of nature and the existence of the Supreme Godhead. Ultimately, Krishna awarded Jarasandha and others killed on the battlefield spiritual liberation. The Lord is strict, but he is not malicious. In fact, he is the ocean of mercy. Text 41. 17 times the king of Magadha met defeat in this very way. And yet, through these defeats, he fought on with his Akshaukini divisions against the forces of the Yadu dynasty who were protected by Krishna. By the power of Lord Krishna, the Vrishnis would invariably annihilate all of Jarasandha's forces, and all of his soldiers had been killed. And when all the soldiers had been killed, the king, released by his enemies, would again go away. Just as the 18th battle was about to take place, a barbarian warrior named Kalayavana, sent by Narada, appeared on the battlefield. Arriving at Mathura, this Yavana laid siege to the city with 30 million barbarian soldiers. He had never found a human rival worth fighting, but he had heard that the Vrishnis were his equals. Purport, Shri Vishnu Chakravarti quotes from the Vishnu Purana concerning the history of Kalayavana. Once, Gargi was ridiculed by his brother-in-law as a eunuch, and when the Yadavas heard this, they laughed heartily. Infuriated by their laughter, Gargi set out for the south, thinking, "May I have a son who will bring terror to the Yadavas?" He worshipped Lord Mahadev, eating powdered iron, and after 12 years obtained his desired benediction. Elated, he returned home. Later, when the childless king of the Yavanas requested a son from him, Gargi begot in the Yavana's wife a son, Kalayavana. Kalayavana possessed the fury of Lord Shiva in his aspect as Mahakala. Once Kalayavana asked Narada, "Who are now the strongest kings on earth?" Narada replied that the Yadus were. Thus, sent by Narada, Kalayavana appeared at Mathura. When Lord Krishna and Lord Shankarshan saw Kalayavana, Krishna thought about the situation and said, "Ah, a great danger now threatens the Yadus from two sides." Purport, we may know here that although Krishna had defeated Jarasandha 17 times against tremendous odds, he did not immediately annihilate the army of Kalayavana, thus keeping intact the benediction granted to Gargi by Lord Shiva, as explained in the previous purport. "This Yavana is besieging us already, and the mighty king of Magadha will soon arrive here, if not today, then tomorrow or the next day. If powerful Jarasandha comes, well, we too are busy fighting Kalayavana. Jarasandha may kill our relatives or else take them away to his capital. Therefore, we will immediately construct a fortress that no human force can penetrate. Let us settle our family members there and then kill the barbarian king." After thus discussing the matter with Balaram, the Supreme Personality of God had a fortress 12 yojanas in circumference built within the sea. Inside that fort, he had a city built containing all kinds of wonderful things. In the construction of that city could be seen the full scientific knowledge and architectural skill of Vishwakarma. There were wide avenues, commercial roads, and courtyards laid out on ample plots of land. There were splendid parks and also gardens stuffed with trees and creepers from the heavenly planets. The gateway towers were topped with golden turrets touching the sky, and their upper levels were fashioned of crystal quartz. The gold-covered houses were adorned in front with golden pots and on top with jeweled roofs, and their floors were inlaid with precious emeralds. Beside the houses stood treasury buildings, warehouses, and stables for fine horses, all built of silver and brass. Each residence had a watchtower and also a temple for its household deity. Filled with citizens of all four social orders, the city was especially beautified by the palaces of Sri Krishna, the Lord of the Yadus. Purport: Sridhar Swami explains that the state highways were in front and the secondary roads behind, and between them were courtyards. Within these courtyards were surrounding walls, and within the walls stood golden residences, atop which shone crystal watchtowers crowned with golden pots. Thus, the buildings were multi-storied. The word vastu indicates that the houses and buildings were constructed on ample plots of land with plenty of room for green areas. Let's read the whole chapter. Lord Indra brought Sri Krishna the Sudharma assembly hall, standing within which a mortal man is not subject to the laws of mortality. Indra also gave the Parijata tree. Lord Varuna offered horses as swift as the mind, some of which were pure dark blue, others white. The treasurer of the demigods, Kuvera, gave his eight mystic treasures, and the rulers of various planets each presented their own opulences. Purport: Sridhar Swami comments as follows in this verse. The master of the treasury is Kuvera, and the eight treasures are his nidhis. These are described as follows. The eight mystic treasures are called Padma, Maha Padma, Matsya, Kurma, Audaka, Nila, Mukunda, and Shankha. The Supreme Lord, having come to the earth, O King, these demigods now offered him whatever powers of control he had previously delegated to them for the exercise of their particular authority. After transporting all his subjects to the new city by the power of his mystic Yoga Maya, Lord Krishna consulted with Lord Balaram, who had remained in Mathura to protect it. Then, wearing a garland of lotuses but bearing no weapons, Lord Krishna went out of Mathura by its main gate. Purport: Srila Vishnu Chakravarti quotes the following verses from Sri Padma Purana Uttarakhanda to describe how Lord Krishna transferred the citizens from Mathura to Dwarka. In the middle of the night, as the citizens of Mathura slept, Lord Jarasandha suddenly removed them from that city and placed them in Dwarka. When the men awoke, they were all amazed to find themselves, their children and their wives, sitting inside palaces made of gold. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the 10th canto, 50th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Krishna Establishes the City of Dwarka. So here we had a description of all the different battles that Jarasandha and Krishna fought. And as we see, Jarasandha was defeated each time. Then he went back home. Then he gathered some more troops. Then he went back, fought again. And he did this 17 times, and it involved, you know, millions and millions of troops each time. So in this way, battle went on until Kaliyavana also appeared, and then Krishna thought, we'll have two people attacking at once, Jarasandha and Kaliyavana. So this is rather dangerous for us. So therefore, he transferred all the inhabitants into a new place, that is Dwarka. So he had to construct that city. Then in this way, outside of Vrindavan, Krishna first went to Mathura, and then finally he went to Dwarka. So this is the method by which he went to, and the reason why he went to Dwarka. That's explained in this chapter. We know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, so even if there is two people or 100 generals attacking, Krishna can always defeat them. It doesn't really matter. Huh? So we can understand that Krishna just did this for certain pastimes in another place. So we know that actually each place, Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka, are different. Huh? They have different moods and different degrees of relationships with Krishna. So they're classified as superior and inferior, even though they're all with Krishna and they're all spiritual. So we have Dwarka. Rupa Goswami calls this Purna manifestation of Krishna. And in Mathura, Krishna is Purnatara, which means more perfect. And in Vrindavan, Krishna is Purnatama. When Krishna left Vrindavan, he was of Kishore age, and he did not age after that point. So actually it's the same Krishna. He looks exactly the same. But yet, he's called Purna, Purnatara, and Purnatama, according to his activities and how he displays his powers and his sweetness. So of all places, of course, Vrindavan is considered to be the supreme place, and Krishna is Purnatama there. Same form as the other places, but different. So the difference is in the way he relates with his devotees in these different places, and therefore what type of relationships and rasas manifest in these different places, and the tastes that manifest. So he's Purna in Dwarka, Purnatara in Mathura, and Purnatama in Vrindavan. So this is his going from Vrindavan to Mathura, and then from Mathura to Dwarka. This is there is some external reasons, such as the attack by Kalayavana and Jarasandha simultaneously. This is one reason, but that's just an external reason. Actually, all of these places are eternal in the spiritual world. So Krishna wants all these places to manifest in the material world also. So therefore, he goes from one place to the other. If he simply sits in Vrindavan all the time, then Mathura will not manifest, nor Dwarka will manifest. But he has three dhams in the spiritual world. One Krishna in the spiritual world also, but he has three different places where he simultaneously lives. So when Krishna is in the material world, he doesn't simultaneously live there. He lives there sequentially in time. So he's first in Vrindavan, then he goes to Mathura, and then he goes to Dwarka. At least that's how it appears to us, that he goes from one place to the other. At the same time, we also know Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So how is it possible that he left Vrindavan? So he did leave Vrindavan, and also he didn't leave Vrindavan. This is the conclusion. Because Krishna is everywhere at once, but we don't see one form of Krishna. So all these places are eternal, but at the same time, in terms of what we see in this world, no, Krishna left. He left Vrindavan, he went to Mathura, and then from Mathura he went to Dwarka. And in this way, he manifested pastimes in each of these places. And the pastimes are slightly different in their quality. And therefore we have Purna, Purnatara, and Purnatama. Of course, we should not say that Krishna is less than himself if he's only Purna in Dwarka. In Purnatara, he's more in Mathura and most in Vrindavan. How can he be three things at once? So, in one sense, no. He's always God. He's always Swayam Bhagavan. But he manifests different number of qualities in these places. He has all the qualities, definitely, because he's Swayam Bhagavan. But according to the situation in each place, he will manifest different amounts of qualities and different relationships with his devotees, which is only natural. This is in the material world. If a person, a family man is there, and he's with his family and his children, he will manifest a relationship which is very different from the relationship he manifests when he's out as a president of a big company. So he's not going to have the same show the same relationships to the people in his company and his employees as he manifests to the family members of his children and wife. It's different. Different manifestation in different places. So this is actually what Vrindavan and Mathura and Dwarka are. They have their different places, and the people are different, and the relationships are different. And Krishna displays different types of relationships with different people. This is, of course, particularly evident in Mathura and Vrindavan, even though they're very close together, and you can walk from one to the other in a few hours, from Mathura to Vrindavan. The sets of people are very different there. They're not the same people at all. So in Vrindavan, we have Nanda and Yasoda and all the cowherd people, and the cowherd boys, and the gopis. And in Mathura, we have the Yadavas, Krishna's eternal associates, his relatives, and his mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki, and King Ugrasena. So they are different from the people of Vrindavan. Of course, the Vrindavan people are cowherd Vaishyas, and the people of Mathura are Kshatriyas. The people of Vrindavan take Krishna as their child, and they never see him as God. And the people of Mathura, they understand that Vasudeva and Devaki have Krishna as their son, but he manifested himself with four hands, therefore he is actually Narayana. He is God. So they understand he is God, at the same time he's a relative. So there's a difference there. People of Vrindavan think of Krishna only as son of Nanda Maharaj, that's all. Cowherd man, cowherd boy. But in Mathura, relationship is different. We should not think that the relationship is not bhakti or not prema. Yes, it's prema everywhere. Krishna with his devotees expresses prema and they express prema. But that has a different quality because of that awareness that he is God. This is still superior to the relationship with Narayan or Narasimha or Rama, even in Mathura or Dwarka. Because the form is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, and in any of these forms he'll manifest more powers and qualities than Rama or Narasimha or any other form of the Lord will manifest. So he's still Swayam Bhagavan in all three places. But still, even as Swayam Bhagavan, the most variety of rasas will exist in full form in Vrindavan, in the highest form. And those rasas will manifest in Mathura with lesser degree of intensity because they also see he is God. So that there's very evident difference there. So if Krishna changes his place and there's different people there, then the rasas will manifest in a different way. His qualities will manifest differently with his devotees. Therefore, Vrindavan is called Purnatama, because there we will find all of the possible relationships, all of the 12 rasas will manifest in most complete form with all of his devotees. And his devotees will manifest their full love in each of the rasas to the highest degree. So that is what makes Vrindavan different from all the other places in which the Krishna of Vrindavan is different. He manifests all of these relationships. So he goes to Mathura, and then there's a different set of people there, different set of devotees. And Krishna responds to them according to their devotion, which is mixture. They see Krishna as God also. So there's mixture in the different rasas there. So there's Vatsalya rasa of Vasudeva and Devaki with Krishna, but it is not the same as the Vatsalya rasa of Nanda and Yasoda in Vrindavan. It's similar. And certainly Vatsalya rasa with the Lord is not present in all the other forms, except Ramachandra. With Narayan, there is no mother and father, so they don't have Vatsalya rasa at all. No one has Vatsalya rasa with Vishnu. But even that Vatsalya rasa is tinged. It is restrained because they also know Krishna is God. And because of that intensity of love of the Brajavasis for Krishna, nothing can compare. So when Uddhava went there, Krishna sent Uddhava there because Uddhava was his intimate friend and servant and counselor and trustworthy among the Yadavas. He was very trustworthy. So he sent him to Vrindavan so he could witness and see what was the love of the Brajavasis. And when he saw that love of Yasoda, Ananda, the gopis and the cowherd men and women, and came back, he said, Brajavasis love Krishna more than we love him, even though we are his relatives. We're his parents are here, Vasudeva and Devaki are here, we're his relatives, but Brajavasis are superior devotees because of the intensity of their love. So that was the judgment of Uddhava. And Uddhava says, even I will aspire for that type of love, because their love is much more intense than my love. So I would like my love to be of that intensity. Yeah. And Krishna and Uddhava was the most truthful. Everyone would take the word of Uddhava. So therefore, when he came back, everyone accepted, yes, Vrajabhasis are superior to us. So that was his Mathura Leela. And of course, the same people, as we see here, were transferred by Krishna by his yoga maya potency. Suddenly, one day, they ended up in Dwarka. Krishna constructed a beautiful city, made an island there, and put walls around it, and put buildings in it, very palatial buildings with crystal towers and domes and kalasas on top made of gold, spires, everything, very beautiful place with roads and alleys, etc., and gardens and lakes. And then everybody woke up one morning and found themselves in this new place. All the inhabitants of Mathura were suddenly in Dwarka. So that's, Krishna's extraordinary power. He can do this. So they abandoned. All the Yadavas left Mathura. They didn't stay there any longer. They left. At least external appearance we see like that. And they came to Dwarka. And then Krishna spent the rest of his life there residing in Dwarka. So Mathura and Dwarka are also different, even though it's the same Krishna again, and it's actually the same people even. Same people are there. The Yadavas, same Yadavas are there, as in Mathura. But yet, the form is considered only Purna. It's less, considered less than Mathura. And the same people are there. So what's the difference? So one difference we see is that there, Krishna actually is no longer a student. And in Mathura, he went off to the Gurukul and was still a child, more or less, and they educated him, etc. Then, when he got to Dwarka, then he was the king, and he had his 16,108 palaces with the queens in it. So his position became very royal at that time compared to Mathura. Even though it's the same people and the same relationships, etc., now there's more opulence, and Krishna's put in a very, very high position of reverence there. So there's a difference between Mathura and Dwarka, even. So similar, it's this Aishwarya mixed with the Madhurya, but still, the Aishwarya becomes stronger there in Dwarka. So therefore, the form of Krishna there and the relationships that are established are somewhat more formal because of that Aishwarya and seeing Krishna as Supreme Lord. So that is why it's considered Purna. In any case, it is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, and all the forms are perfect and spiritual, and all the inhabitants have wonderful relationships with the Lord, which are very satisfying to everyone. Yet, if we objectively examine the intensity of relationship and the bliss that they experience, then we have to conclude that Krishna's form in Vrindavan is the supreme form, because there we have the highest expression of rasa's highest expression of bliss possible in all the different forms of Krishna. So therefore Krishna manifests himself in these three places just to show that even he can manifest all sorts of qualities, not just Krishna. Yesterday we were talking about he is Nara Akriti. He is human form, so it's very difficult for many people to understand. He's very, very human. So in all these places he is human, definitely. Same form, Kaishar form, human form. But the people of Mathura and Dwarka, they understand also he is human form, but he is Supreme Lord, God. But in Vrindavan, they don't even accept that. They never accept that. And they refuse to accept that fact. Of course, we can ask, when Nanda and the cowherd men went to Mathura, then they must have heard, yes, Krishna is Supreme Lord. Krishna came out of Vasudeva and Devaki, from Devaki, and he manifested forehand, so he's the Supreme Lord. They must have heard that. So what happened? Why don't they believe it? So whatever they were told, they don't believe. They don't hear it. Because of their love for Krishna. They cannot accept it. Whatever they hear, they do not accept it if it contradicts their relationship with Krishna. That is the strength of their love. It is so strong. Similarly, when the Vrajavasis went to Kurukshetra to meet Krishna, and then all the Yadavas were there, and Vasudeva and Devaki and Rohini were there. And Rohini and Devaki were watching as Nanda and Yasoda met Krishna and Balaram, and they saw the intensity of their love, and they were astonished. And then Devaki said, well, actually, you know, Krishna's my son, but Mother Yasoda is expressing such love for Krishna as superior to my love. This is very strange. But actually, she's my son. And Yasoda didn't hear this. Nanda didn't hear this. they just rejected that. They were so much in bliss and seeing Krishna and Balaram that they would never hear such statements. So in this way, their faith in Krishna and their love for Krishna is never in any way diminished by any statement that is made by the Yadavas or whatever. That is the intensity of their love. And even in Vrindavan, Krishna will test Mother Yasoda, so he shows the universal form in his mouth to Mother Yasoda and says, here I am, I'm Supreme Lord, the universe is in me, everything's in me, even you're in me. And Mother Yasoda sees that directly. But after the incident is finished, she rejects the whole thing. It cannot be. Why? Because Krishna's my son. He's not God. So how can this be? Must be an illusion. Demons are creating illusions for us. That's all. So in this way, the love is so strong that nothing can interfere with that. And even Krishna kills demons. There's always some excuse why it's not Krishna. And if Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, they all saw him lift Govardhan Hill. In fact, that was one reason why Krishna did that, so that everybody could see Krishna continuously. Because usually Mother Yasoda and Nanda, they see Krishna in the morning and evening, and in the daytime he's gone in the forest. So they don't see him all day. And the cowherd boys see him in the middle of the day, and then evening time, then they separate again. So nobody sees him all day and all night. So for 7 days and seven nights, everybody saw Krishna continuously. He's standing there in the middle, holding up Govardhan Hill with his left hand. So everybody saw this remarkable feat. And they must think, well, he must be God after all. But yet, the power of their love is such that even that does not diminish their idea that Krishna is only our son. So when people talked about this later, then Yasoda would tell them, actually Krishna didn't do it. He was there, but actually it was the strength of Balaram and Nanda behind him that they were actually doing it. So it wasn't really Krishna. So because we worship Narayan so long, and Nanda's a devotee of Narayan, therefore Narayan is helping Nanda Maharaj do this, and not Krishna. So in this way, their affection is such that even if Krishna displays his opulences, it never interferes with their love. That is the strength. Whereas in Mathura and Dwarka, they admire Krishna when he carries out these feats. So therefore, when he kills demons, he does it very publicly. Everyone sees, and everybody praises him. Oh, he killed, or he defeats, Balaram is defeating Jarasandha. Everybody sees that. And in Vrindavan, often it's very difficult to understand what happened when Krishna kills Putana. It's rather unclear how she got killed. And when he kills Agasura, it's also unclear. He goes in the mouth and suddenly he gets choked. He chokes him up by expanding himself, but nobody sees what happens actually. But suddenly cowherd boys come out and everybody's saved. And so there's always opportunity to make some excuse why Krishna didn't do it. He doesn't display things. And if he does, he does it to the cowherd boys as a joke. And so they all accept it as a joke. Krishna's joking with these demons and he's killing them. So in this way, their relationship with Krishna is never disturbed, even though he kills demons. But in Mathura and Dwarka, then Everybody praises him, and they see how powerful he is when he kills the demons, because they accept he's Supreme Lord. Yeah. So in the pastimes out of Vrindavan, then we'll see a lot of these battles. Here we see this whole battle with described here with all these blood and the soldiers and heads floating around and the blood and chariot wheels, everything all, horses, everything all. This is in the Mahabharata, huge scenes of battle and Krishna and Balaram fighting. So, obviously people appreciate the heroic acts of Krishna and Balaram here, and they understand they are Supreme Lord. So this is the difference between the two types of lila. Vrindavan is everything is covered with that intense love of Krishna as son or as friend or as master or as lover, and they don't see him as God at all, in spite of the fact that he does display more powers there than he displays anywhere else. Still, the love covers it up. So that is the significance of Vrindavan. That makes it the most powerful, the most high expression of love. Anyway, Krishna manifests all these different forms. Why? Because there are infinite number of devotees, and infinite number of devotees have infinite number of relationships with the Lord. So some have very intimate relationships, and some have relationships mixed with seeing him as God, and they're satisfied with that, and they derive their pleasure from that. They get complete bliss from that type of relationship. So therefore Krishna manifests himself in these three different stages of sweetness and power in three different places. And this way these devotees are all satisfied. So that is how why Krishna does this. He manifests these different places to satisfy his different types of devotees. Okay, any question?
Maharaj, you mentioned once in Vrindavan, in that in the spiritual world, the demons don't manifest there. It's only in the earth when Krishna has his power up here that the demons manifest the second.
I think Krishna Chakra mentions sometimes there are demons manifested in the spiritual world, but they're only play demons, fake demons, actually. Actually, devotees, you know. In the spiritual world. Yeah, okay. You're not going to have any of these battles like he's. No. If Krishna wants to carry out these extreme amounts of virya rasa, he does it in the material world. Yeah. Yeah, no violent fighting like that. If they fight, they're having maybe combats with them among themselves for play or whatever, but not with big demons, because there's no big demons there.
Something that was always perplexing me is that because, as you say, Krishna is manifesting these different areas of service for the devotees to be able to relate to him. Yeah. Does the devotee say, for example, when he goes to the spiritual world, his relationship with Krishna is in Dwarka? Is that eternally his relationship with Krishna in Dwarka, or can the devotee progress still?
Go backwards in time or something. While it's not mentioned anywhere like that, and generally, like in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Rupa Goswami, he says, according to your sadhana, when you're in the material world, you fix yourself on a particular form. And that continual practice over many lifetimes fixes that type of relationship, and then that's what you achieve when you end up with prema. It'll be determined by your sadhana. That's what seems to be said there. So he says, even if you worship Krishna with Vaidhi Bhakti, now of course you worship Dwarka Krishna, obviously you go to Dwarka Krishna, but if you worship Radha Krishna with Vaidhi Bhakti, what happens? Because in Vaidhi Bhakti we see Radha Krishna, but we also see them as the Lord. But it's not Dwarka, obviously, because we don't have Radha Krishna and Dwarka. We have Rukmini and Krishna, or Satyabhama and Krishna, but not Radha and Krishna. Yeah? So if we were to continue that in that mode of worshipping Radha Krishna with Vaidhi Bhakti, and we went through sadhana, through nishta, ruchi, asakti, and then we got bhava and prema, what type of Krishna we'd realize with that Vaidhi Bhakti? So he says, you realize Aishvarya Goloka. So there's another Radha Krishna place as well that looks like same with the same people, but Aishwarya. Just as we have Krishna and Dwarka with Aishwarya. So you have a Goloka Aishwarya, Aishwarya Goloka also, where Krishna's the same Krishna with the cowherd boy clothes and their flute and everything, but they worship him as God. So it's called Aishwarya Goloka. So that's where you would go if you worship Radha Krishna. In Aishwarya mood, in Vaidhi Bhakti, then you go there. And if you get Raga Bhakti, Raghunuga Bhakti, and you practice that spontaneously, then you attain the Gokul aspect, where there's no Aishwarya.
So there's no chance of progress.
That's what it seems to indicate, yeah.
In this occasion, it seems that our relationship with Krishna's spiritual world is actually determined by the sunna that we do here, which means that we can basically change it.
You can change our sadhana. In a sense, but if you understand that we could change, theoretically we can change, but at the same time, we see, for instance, with Lord Chaitanya and the people of Sri Rangam, he was there for 4 months, and they were good friends with, he was good friends with the pujaris of the temple, the Sri Rangam temple, and he would talk with them and argue with them that Krishna is supreme, not Vishnu. But they never, none of them changed, except Gopal Bhatta, the one son, he became a devotee, he changed. But the others remained, in spite of the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. So somehow or other, some people will, they may get the knowledge and everything, but they don't just whimsically change their relationship. They may have a preference for that type of relationship. So nothing you can say logically or shastrically can interfere with that type of relationship. And in the same way, Lord Chaitanya had devotees of Rama, that is Anupam and Murari Gupta. And Lord Chaitanya told Murari Gupta, you should become a Krishna Bhakta because Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan and Rama is an expansion form and not as complete as Rasas. But Murari Gupta was very upset with that. And then he went home and he thought about it all night and he couldn't sleep. When he went back to Lord Chaitanya in the morning, he said, I can't change. I cannot follow your order, Lord Chaitanya. And then Lord Chaitanya said, that's good. I accept that. And so, and we on that level where one begins to realize the Lord, one will appreciate a certain form and not another form and not whimsically change. That's what it appears. And then they'll do their sadhana in that direction more and more. That's what it seems to be. So it kind of resolves the conflict. And of course, the other thing is that. Of course, the Lord is in the heart, so He will direct people according to their what they need and what their Atma is, so that they can get that particular type of knowledge and sadhu sangha, etc. So that's also there. Mahaprabhu's, of course, it's not explained explicitly in Chaitanya Charitamrita or other places like that. But Bhakti, I don't know where he gets it from, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there is like a section of the spiritual world in Goloka, which, because Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are Swayam Bhagavan, both Swayam Bhagavan, and very similar in their mood, with all the rasas manifest, etc. Therefore, their abodes will be right next to each other in the spiritual world. So therefore, as part of Goloka, we have Navadvip Dham there also. It's similar, but there is a difference because Lord Chaitanya is playing the role of a bhakta. And therefore, the Madhurya Rasa does not manifest in the same way as with Krishna and the gopis. So there's no explicit manifestation there. Of course, he was married, but that's more considered to be like somewhat of an Aishwarya Rasa there with his Vishnu Priya and Lakshmi Priya. So we don't see an explicit Rasalila of Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya. Now there is one group called the Gauranagaris, we don't consider as bona fide. And they do worship Krishna, Lord Chaitanya in that mood. And they see him as, they act as gopis, and they see Krishna, Lord Chaitanya as their lover. So there is that group, but Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivedanta reject them as not a bona fide type of relationship with Lord Chaitanya. All right.